You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Live from beautiful Jacksonville, North Carolina. Joining me is Jeff Kenny, who flew in last night. So, Colonel, he's part of the incredible dynamic duo of Lynch and Kenny. And that's becoming actually kind of a crowd favorite. Do you know that? Are you?
I'm gratified by that.
Are you?
Yes.
All right, now put the microphone by your mouth.
Okay, how's that?
That's better. We can understand you now. All right. You and I were talking last night, and you were telling me a story about after you got wounded in 2008. And so the path is what, to Landstuhl, to Bethesda, Walter Reed,
right.
And then to Palo Alto,
right?
Because you had traumatic brain injury,
right?
So you told me something that I'd never heard before, and you said that your wife, intervene because they had you tied to the rack,
right,
and
right.
Okay, so explain. I was dumbstruck by that.
Right. What happened was the TBI thing was becoming a huge problem. All of a sudden, I mean, the IDs started in earnest in 2004, and they just got better and better at it. Right. And we got better, but not as fast as they did because they're a lot more expensive. And having the protective vehicles, the Humvees are up-armored. And what would happen is when you up-armor the thing and you put the top of the line in 2006 anyway, the 1114, when you had the windows all the way up, it caused a phenomenon where when the IED would go off, there would be huge overpressure inside. And so besides the injury from the explosion, ripping open the vehicle and shrapnel and fire and the fuel and stuff like that, besides that, you had that which would hurt your brain worse. Your brain and rupture.
You had essentially the blast trapped in the vehicle, right?
Right.
With nowhere
right.
to go.
And it went off. I was sitting in the vehicle commander's seat behind the Blue Force tracker, which is a thing we use.
So front right seat.
Right, the front right seat. And it went off directly under the guy who was behind me, who was the XO of the Iraqi brigade, and he killed him. And it wounded the rest of us. And I had over 30 fractures throughout my head, my back, and in my ribs. And my lungs were mostly collapsed. I had one chamber open. And this is all relayed to me later. But I also had this brain thing that it was hard to determine how bad it was for all of us. And so, as you said, I got evacuated from that part of Iraq, Anbar province outside of Al-Asad, to Fallujah, from Fallujah to Balad, from Balad to Landstuhl, and finally to Bethesda. And I don't remember any of that. I don't even remember being at Bethesda.
Did they put you in a...
Part of it was induced because of all the fractures, all the broken ribs, and the collapsed lungs. That you get desperate trying to get enough air, which causes you to panic, and then adrenaline and it exacerbates the problem, and you go into shock. So to keep that from happening, they put me in a coma, and they didn't take me out of it till after I was in Bethesda for a few days, and I'm not really even sure when. But even then, I remember very little of being in Bethesda for the time I was there. And there's me and there's a bunch of other guys. Now, there was a specialty, though. We were a special group in that we had collapsed lungs, we had significant traumatic brain injury, and we had all these other wounds. So once they stabilized the other ones, and some of those were more life-threatening immediately, than the other ones. We had kids with sucking chest wounds who also had TBI. We had kids with gunshot wounds to the lower part of their abdomen. They had to be stabilized before it's over. We had burned guys. We had, when they got enough of us.
And you know, just so everybody knows, any kind of wound to the lower abdomen is a nightmare because there's so much internal bleeding and there, you know, it's really a race between the vascular surgeons.
Yeah.
And your body rejecting all the blood that you're going to be given, because at some point when you get all this other blood, your organs begin to reject it,
right.
And so there's this race that goes on between vascular surgeons with lower abdominal injuries because there's just so much damage done in there, and you get somebody to the hospital and they're working on them, you think okay they're going to be okay, and
right.
You find out they're not. So
exactly. So.
So all this stuff has to be dealt with before, obviously, you can deal with the TBI.
Right. And then there's that. And then because of the lung thing, they waited till there's enough of us to justify. And this is, I don't know for sure if this is why they did it, but when they had a lot of us who had this combination of injury, they got a C5, and they flew us in a C5 all the way to California. And it was mostly Marines, some corpsmen, who were wounded, and a couple of Army guys. And that I remember pretty good because...
So was it the C-5 that had litters in it?
Yeah, the C-5 had litters and...
If you've never seen these things...
Yeah, it's amazing.
Holy shit, man. I saw pictures of it. The Washington Post did a story about casualties coming from Landstuhl back to the United States, and they showed the number of... I mean, they're... How many would you say? Maybe 4 or 5 tall?
Yeah, they had, for us, because there wasn't that many of us, it was only 2 tall. But they were bolted in to where, you know, they normally have, if you had a lot of people, all those seats.
Right.
There was none of that. There's just the seats that were up against either bulkhead.
Either sidewall. And then the whole middle of the aircraft is devoted to places where litters, and there's all the electronics, you know, to monitor patient. There's doctors and nurses there. I was blown away when I saw it. I was like, wow. No, I don't know why it was. I mean, I would imagine there would be something like that, but I never really gave it some thought when I saw it. I was like, holy shit, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, and they flew us to the Air Force Base up there by San Francisco?
Travis?
Yes. And then they drove us to Palo Alto. And I remember all of that. And here's the thing. Because all this stuff has happened so fast, they're trying their best to help us.
Right.
But there's a lot of miscommunication. And so we went into this, I remember the names Menlo Park.
Right.
I remember the Palo Alto is a VA hospital, it seemed like. And I remember the layout of the thing was almost exactly like the layout of the hospital that from One Floor of the Cuckoo's Nest. And that you had a day room and stuff, and there's other vets in there. And none of them were combat vets. They were guys who like lost their legs because they had diabetes from being alcoholics, or they had been in car wrecks.
Right.
They just got sick, you know.
VA stuff, right?
VA stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So then there's probably about half of the people there, about 100 of us total, about half of these older guys. And so we got in there, and I think they got.
Now what month in 2006?
This was like August.
You know, and that's
and I got hit in May.
I was in Fallujah.
Yeah.
Dave and I were in Fallujah.
Yeah,
and I remember hearing about it.
Yeah.
But it happened out west.
Right.
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 I didn't have a lot of business on it. I remember seeing your name, and I remember seeing you evacuated.
Yeah. And so when we got there, they I think they thought we had behavior problems. We had guys who, like, I had one of Dave, General Furness's guys from his battalion, was this guy named Cole, Lance Corporal Cole. And this kid was like 6'2", but he couldn't have weighed more than 110 pounds by the time he got there. He had other wounds. Huge, grievous wounds besides the fact that he was brain damaged. And he was one of them. And then there's a doc, who was also in 1-1, who was there. And I remember when we got in there, they kind of like cuffed us. They put like little, like, cages over the racks. And sometimes they had restraints that they put on us at night to keep, as if we were like, we were brain damaged, but we weren't, disturbed. I don't know how to say it.
That makes sense.
We weren't like
a threat to anybody.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. We were banged up bad. And so I told, and I have to tell you, Bethesda, they're working their asses off trying to help us. So if you're like, my wife was there the whole time, from the time I was, you know, I first got to the hospital, my wife and my mom and other parts of my family, but the one person who flew with me. And they would have dependents flying with us on that C-5. They'd be sitting in those hard seats on the side. And
the seats.
And so I said, you know, it was kind of heartbreaking because we had a lot of freedom. It's to the point where my mom and Lori took me to Ruth Chris the last week I was in Bethesda. They took me out of the hospital. I don't remember a damn thing about it. I remember trying to get booze and they wouldn't let me. And and then, so now we're in Palo Alto. And the attitude towards us changed. We were like, you will do this, you will do that. And the dependents can only be here during certain hours. And, you know, and it was very more draconian, as if we had committed a crime. And
is that how you felt?
Yeah. And I rebelled against the law. I pushed back. I'm like, hey, this it's for your own safety. It's like I remember the movie. L.A. Confidential, they're getting ready to beat this guy half to death, and they got him restrained to a chair. Danny DeVito's, man. He goes, what do you have me restrained for? He goes, well, it's for your own safety. And so, you know, they weren't cruel to us, but it was awful. My wife is upset because I was upset. And I have to tell you, I was, around that time, I was paranoid that they were going to throw me out of the Marine Corps for having brain damage. And I was kind of sketchy before I got blown up, brain-wise. And now, And because I was brain damaged and I was on a massive amount of mind-altering painkillers, I was on morphine and fentanyl and Oxycontin, and so I wasn't sure of my own perception. Even now, when I look back, I'm not. But and I was upset, and that upset Lori, who was a neophyte. We didn't get married till, you know, the early 2000s, and so she was pretty much a new wife, and she didn't know what to do. And I'm like, and I wasn't very much help to her. Because I was cursing, and, you know, and I wasn't physically up to it. I was all busted up. And so she called our oldest kid who had been in 1-5. He's like, get him out of there. Just put him in a car and escape, you know. And that wasn't the answer. And so then I think she called, she may have called Linda because Linda was home, but she.
Linda
Furness, Dave's wife. But she got Lynn Crow, who is her husband was the CO of the 7th Marine Regiment, and she heard about it, and she was incensed. And then we got a call from General Sattler's wife, and we got a call from, I think, General Dunford's wife, because we knew her. I don't remember exactly who, but I know the tree started shaking. And I have to tell you, there was a guy who was wounded before me who we both served with at the basic school, Tim Maxwell,
yeah.
He was grievously wounded and had an awful head injury, too.
Jeff and I were talking last night. I talked to Tim Maxwell 3 minutes before he got hit. He put the phone down. He said, hey, Mac, I need to get back to you. I'm going to go do battlefield circulation. Got to run and grab my helmet and flak. I'll call you later. And within minutes was the first report that he had been hit. He was good friends with Roger Turner.
Right.
Roger Turner and I were doing current ops, and that's how I heard about it so fast, was that somebody called Roger and said, and he just put down the phone and looked at me, and he said, Max had been hit. And he said, and it's not looking good.
Right. So it was horrid. It was horrid. He had this huge, he was way worse than me, brain-wise. And, but he recovered.
And that was in 2004, and now we're talking 2006.
And he was, as recovered as he was going to get, and he was a leader in the whole Wounded Warrior Battalion thing.
Right.
He's the reason we got it. You know, him and his wife, you know, Erin, I think her name was. You know, and anyway, the next day after Lori called, in comes Tim Maxwell in Charlie's with this wound you could see on his head. And,
now, had they put his skull back together
yet? Yeah, but it was, you could see that he had had...
The zipper and all the rest of it?
Yes, yeah, it was...
So he looked like Frankenstein.
He looked mean, man. He looked mean anyway.
He did look mean.
Yeah, and so... And he had come to see me in Bethesda, because I was an asshole. I was really in the height of paranoia, where I was afraid they were going to throw me out of the Marine Corps. Because... So I was going to hide the fact that I was
pregnant. And you're like Zach Mayo, right? You got nowhere else to go.
Right,
yeah. Right. So, ergo the panic.
Yeah, you take the Marine Corps out of Jeff Kennedy, there's nothing there.
Nothing left.
Yeah.
It's going to be a garbage man in Baltimore.
Right.
With all due respect to garbage men in Baltimore.
Even that I'd probably get shit canned from. Hey, look, you're just not up to snuff. You got to go. But, he came inside for like 3 hours, Lori said. And I don't remember any of it, but it was good, she says. After it was good. And, because, you know, I was recovering, but it's not fast in your brain.
Oh, my God.
And so, now when he came out in Palo Alto, I remember that, because he went in, he marched in, and he's there for like 3 hours inspecting the place and giving people shit, it seemed like. And then he finally goes to see Dr. Ziner, who is the head shrink or whatever. She wasn't even a psychiatrist, she was a psychologist. And she goes, oh.
Close enough.
Yeah, she goes, Lieutenant Colonel Maxwell, nice to see you. He goes, you know how I know this is a fucked up organization? And she goes, no. Because I've been here for like however long he was there. And that one son of a bitch has come to me and said, what the hell do you want? If I was in a Marine company area, I'd have a gunny in my ass in 10 minutes. At the longest. Which is true. At least it used to be. And so that was kind of a shock to them. And then the little cloth, they were like made out of netting. They were gone from, you know, the things that were restraining in there.
Right.
They were gone. And then the next day, General Sattler and Sergeant Major Kent show up. And then it was like Mutt was in Thursday, and then Jeff and Jeff's brother came in Friday. And it was and then things got better steadily. There was a Fisher House across the street, and we weren't even allowed to go in there. Until after the Maxwell...
Well, they tell you can't leave the premises.
Yeah, you can't leave the premises. It was awful. And they just didn't know. And so their reaction was, you know, don't let them go out of our sight. I can understand that, you know, but...
But if they're escorted by family members and stuff like that...
They didn't... And we had some... those memories stick with me. Because I go visit those guys every morning, all the Marines. I take my little walker and I go down there place to place. And
have you seen the walkers now they have with wheels and brakes and stuff?
It's amazing. And they got like
legs. Good pieces of gear. Yeah, you could put it on that little cushion and go rolling around.
Yeah,
you could like put a drink in like the drink holder and go rolling around to your friends.
Yeah, it was something. So I go see Cole every day. He's one of seven or eight. I go until I got too tired, and then I had to get back to my room.
Lay down.
And so I see Colo every day, and he would ask me, sir, you know, he'd already had a tour in Iraq. He got hurt on his second tour in Iraq in a 4-year enlistment. And he's like, sir, you know, I really don't. And he was grievously wounded. And every day he'd said, sir, I don't really think I should have to go back. I'm not trying to get out of it or nothing. But, you know, I'm hurt pretty bad. And, you know, I think that. And I would get all choked up. There's no way. There's just no way. And I said, don't worry.
Because you know what? In fact, Jeff and I were talking about last night, right? The randomness that you see.
Yeah.
At some point, and Mike Strank said this before he went to Iwo Jima and got killed,
right,
to his family. I don't think I'm going to make through this next one. And, you know, the story I read is like, you know, I want to say his dad, you know, got very upset, or whoever he told got very upset and said, don't say that. And he said, look, you only have so much luck.
Yeah.
There's so many close calls and the randomness, and at some point, everybody's luck runs out.
Yeah.
And he was killed on Iwo Jima. Anyway.
Yeah, similar, luck took a big hit for a lot of people. I mean, Iwo Jima was the worst battle ever for us, for sure. And so I would go back to my room, and I'd be all choked up, and Lori would go, oh, my God, you know. So I'd go see him the next day. And that would happen again. I forgot because I couldn't remember an hour before, let alone The day before. It was like Groundhog Day, but it was horrible. And the fourth day, Larry goes, I'm not letting you get down there anymore because, you know, it was kind of, you know, it was like the same thing.
It's going to happen.
It was upset and cold, too, you know. So we developed this thing where everyone's getting better. You know, everyone was getting better, all of us there. So then they let us go over to the Fisher House. And that was like a huge liberation.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's this one kid. I can't remember his name, but he had shrapnel on his face. So when you saw him, it looked like he was something out of Star Trek. He had like, instead of freckles, he had like shiny pieces of metal all over his face. And they were taking him out little by little, but, you know, it wasn't the worst wound he had either.
Right.
And so they were piss testing us every day at first. How can you piss test us? I mean, I'm hooked up to these drugs.
Quit talking in the side of the microphone, you dope.
And so, I don't know.
You got to point it towards your mouth.
Kind of disturbed.
There you go.
All right, there you go. So,
he's back.
I was just imitating Frank Sinatra. they got fixed. They got fixed. But I remember getting an email from one of my earliest memories. Lori was getting emails. It says, send the emails here and Jeff can read them. So, there was Dave sends in. He goes, "Hey, I hear you're really. Are you all right or what? You know, you." He goes, "Are you brain dead?" And so we had read a book when we were on ship when we went into Iraq the first time. For me, the first time. For him, like the third time, I think. So he was over there, you know, with OAF1, and we read this book by John Atkinson called The Army of Dawn, which is part of a trilogy. And by the way, plug for not that I know the guy, but these three books he wrote about the war in the Eastern Theater during the Second World War, U.S. Operations, just three great books. But that one, Army of Dawn, there's a part where General is not listening to the General McNair, the guy who's the head of the whole training for all the Army. He's castigating like the CG of the 1st Infantry Division. He's castigating George Patton, for Christ's sake. This is when the 2nd Corps was going through Tunisia. They said to him, "Sir, don't go over on the military crest. There's trees." He goes, "There's trees. There's cover up there." He goes, "And the Germans seem to know we're up there. They shoot these 88s they got. They're like sniper rifles, but they're 88. They're 88 millimeter. They hit the trees. The shrapnel. We've lost a lot of guys that way." So he disregards them. They shoot an 88 at a tree. He gets hit in the back of the head with shrapnel, and he's being carried down the hill. He sees Patton. Patton goes, "General, what happened?" And he says, "I misjudged my death leg." So when Dave asked me over the email, "Are you okay?" I said, "I just misjudged my duffelway." So then he knew I wasn't totally retired.
When you hear Dave's version of the story and Dave tell it, he said, when he wrote that back to me, I knew that he was going to be okay.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. But no, Jeff and I were talking last night here, and we started, and he started telling that story. And it's a side of the conflict that you tend not to see.
Right.
Right? And that is, you know, VA organizations attempting to adjust.
Right.
And people that probably shouldn't be making these decisions. And thank God, right, that you were a colonel. Right. Thank God that Lori was there. Could you imagine if you were Lance Corporal?
Yeah.
It would have just gone on. Nobody would have said shit because nobody wants to rock the boat and get in trouble.
Well, let me tell you a secret about the VA. I mostly give them credit.
Right.
But a VA person doesn't see any difference between a Lance Corporal or a Lieutenant General unless someone comes in and tells them. That's the reason why, you know, we all were getting treated by this, like this, in the same screwed up way, you know. Nobody did anything special. The only thing about me was I was a Lieutenant Colonel, and the next highest ranking person there was a captain. Wounded wise,
right.
I wasn't intimidated by the fact that they were the, you know, I was in their ass, bad in their ass sometimes, you know, and that helped, you know, so that did help, but they didn't, you know, when you go to the VA, like the VA hospital, and I'm sure you experience this now, but I go to the VA, you know, that's where I get my medical stuff, and they don't treat me bad. But they don't treat me any better than the, you know, than the
anybody else.
The old gunny, you know, who right. you know, who either retired or didn't, you know, and who goes to the VA.
No, I mean, it's an amazing story to think that, that Marines are restrained, that have TBI, that there's some kind of cage, you know, over them, and it's just not a story. It was just amazing. But the thanks for telling that. You're gonna hear from Jeff all week because we're hanging out back here in Jacksonville, North Carolina. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
On a Monday, that'll do it. Thanks for listening. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. You can hear me unpack a really, really busy weekend. And we get going today. We'll do post-traumatic winning here for the 2nd Division and then for spouses of the division tonight. So it's going to be an awesome week. So thanks for listening. Don't touch that dial. If you're just tuning in, you'll hear it again. These will post to the these two interviews or segments will post to the website here in a little bit. Have a great day on a Monday. All Marine Radio. Over and out.